The date is Wednesday, June 7th, 2017. The time is 2 o'clock p.m. This is a hearing of the District of Columbia Rental Housing Commission. The location is the hearing room in Suite 1140 North, 441 4th Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. We're here pursuant to D.C. Law 6-10, the Rental Housing Act of 1985 is amended. I'm Chairman Peter Segedy Mazak, and I will serve to chair today's hearing. On my right is Commissioner Diana Harris Epps, and on my left is Commissioner Michael Spencer. We have one argument today, notice for hearing at 2 p.m. regarding the housing accommodation located at 3661 Winfield Lane Northwest. The tenant petition number is RHTP1330448. The case is styled Ben Purbabai Housing Provider Appellant versus Christopher Bell et al. Tenants Appellees. The Commission notes that there are parties seated before it and would ask that you identify yourselves for the record, beginning with that Housing Provider Appellant.
Ben Purbabai.
Ben Purbabai. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Amir Sadeghi on behalf of the tenants and appellees. They are not present at the hearing today because they are not in town.
Okay. You have their authority to...
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And Sean Traynor, also at the Office of the Tenant Advocate.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Traynor. Thank you. I'd like to briefly explain our procedures. Our rules are similar to those of the D.C. Court of Appeals. Each party will have 20 minutes to present your case, beginning with the housing provider appellant. The housing provider appellant may reserve up to 5 minutes of your 20 minutes for rebuttal following the presentation of the case of the tenants appellees. The tenants appellees must present all of your arguments within the 20-minute time frame and will have no rebuttal time. In our discretion, we may allow additional time for argument to a party in the event that our questions occupy a substantial portion of your time. Our hearing will be recorded on audio CD. Our decision will be issued in writing and sent to the parties within the next 45 to 60 days. In this proceeding, we do not request nor will we accept post-hearing submissions. Please turn off any cell phones or other electronic equipment at this point. In the interest of administrative efficiency and opportunity for prompt resolution of this appeal, we respectfully ask each party whether either or both of you may be interested in settling this case before your arguments. We have on our staff a very experienced settlement officer who would serve as the settlement official for the parties. The Commission, like the D.C. Court of Appeals, encourages settlement of disputes on appeal. Is there an interest, Mr. Purbabai, in adjourning this briefly in the interest of trying to talk to the other party with respect to a settlement?
Yes.
Mr. Sadeghi, is it Sadeghi?
Sadeghi.
Yes, is there an interest on the part of the tenants for a brief recess to discuss the possibility of the settlement with Mr. Purbabai with our settlement officer?
Ordinarily, I would say yes. In this case, because my clients are not here and I do not have settlement authority on their behalf, I don't believe that it's going to be a fruitful endeavor unless Mr. Purbabai, after several years of litigation, will have changed his mind and will agree to pay the entire sum of the security deposit.
Well, we need both parties to agree to this. Were you a tenant during this period of time?
No. I'm an attorney at the Office of the Tenant Advocate.
Oh, okay. Both of you are. Okay, gentlemen. Well, so you're... Am I then to assume that you're not interested in trying to settle this?
I'm interested, but I don't believe I'm able to because my clients are not here.
Okay. And you didn't discuss this with your clients beforehand, that there might be a possibility of possibly... a settlement before this?
A long time ago, years ago we did, but not leading up to this hearing because we were not aware that there was a possibility at this point.
Let me ask you quite frankly a question. Do you think that your tenants, that your clients might be interested in a settlement if we postpone this hearing to another date in the near future so that you would have a time to discuss this with them? Mr. Pourbaix, would that be of interest to you in the light of the fact that you've just heard counsel for the tenants say that he does not have their authority, but he would be, would you be willing to contact them and ask them if they have any interest in a settlement at this point? It's up to you. I mean, if we don't have agreement now, then we're not going to go.
I don't believe it'll be a fruitful endeavor.
Then we're just going to say no settlement. Mr. Pourbaix, there's not an opportunity for settlement then. In the absence of any preliminary matters, we shall now hear from the tenant appellant, housing provider appellant. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal, Mr. Pourbaix?
I would be grateful if you would advise me when the 5 minutes...
5 minutes, very good, sir. Okay, Mr. Pourbaix, please present your appeal.
Thank you very much. The case has already been presented. It has been litigated. All the arguments have been thoroughly written. It is in your disposal, so you are more than welcome to...
Could you move a little closer to the microphone so that we can get this recorded?
Of course. So the information is available to you. All the facts are delineated for the commission. The responses from OAH is also provided to you. I just summarized the situation so you know my predicament too. I used to have a $2 million luxury townhouse in Georgetown, which I was paying near $12,000 per month for mortgage. It was my investment property, my retirement property. We couldn't, in that time, it was $2 million property. We rented it to these Georgetown students. 16 people, half of them lawyers, looked at the lease agreement. Collectively, they signed it. 8 tenants and 8 co-signers, half of them lawyers. So it wasn't like we are dealing with abstract issues. Every single term was negotiated. They were told that this is a very expensive property. I'm losing money on the mortgage by giving them this house. And they knew about it. I told them it's very expensive to rent, to paint this house. It's a 3,200 square feet townhouse. I have to pay $13,000. So I want this townhouse to be preserved for me. At the beginning, like any new relationship, people are always kind and give the very rosy picture of who they are. And I bought the idea too. So we engaged in this relationship, and from the beginning, situation began to deteriorate.
We have that in our files, Mr. Pourbaix. Let me ask you, what we have a decision below.
Yes.
And what errors do you believe occurred below in the judge's opinion? What do you think the judge? How did the judge not follow the law below in your view?
Your Honor, I think very correctly you and your colleagues made great observations, and you informed the administrative judge about those issues. The administrative judge had the latitude to take the time to study your instructions and your legal observations. I am a layman. I presented myself in front of you a year and a half ago. You observed, and your colleagues observed, those very salient points, and you noted them to the administrative judge. The administrative judge, who chose not to bother with your observations, ignored them all, made absurd comments, and I have responded to them, totally unrelated cases, and tried to basically whitewash the whole thing, which I tried to point a number of them. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm sure a lawyer could identify those observations in a more legal construct. I did my best to tell you that her observations are unrelated. None of them are addressing your concerns, the Commission's concerns. The Commission concerns clearly stated that I suffered financial damages due to these tenants' abuses, and more than three estimates were provided for all my damages. These are not my estimates. One is for $32,000, one is $20,000.
Mr. Purvai, yes. Hold on 1 second. Yes. The notice that you provided the tenants within 45 days of the termination of their tenancy did not include estimates that other estimates that you may have gotten. For example, there was a scope of work estimate of considerably more than what your September 10th estimate included. You asked for 1 month's rent for the failure to conduct two biannual inspections and cleaning of the unit.
Your Honor, I let go of all those fines. Those fines were identified by Mr. Sadeghi as irrelevant. Initially, I informed him that all those fines are non-issues.
So what exactly then?
The damages.
The damages, let me just ask you this, sir. Are those the damages that are included in the other contractor reports that amount to $30,000 to $40,000
yes,
worth of damages?
In my response to them, I did indicate that these estimates would be provided to you. And bear in mind, Your Honor, I was in Canada. I gave them the latitude to overlook all these damages. And I wasn't served. I, out of my own honor, replied to them. They didn't serve me. They have to serve me. I just replied to them out of goodwill and told them that you didn't give me 60 days notice. You agreed. You give 1 month rent for that. Forget about all my damages, which are excess of $40,000. He didn't give me any notice. You damaged my AC unit. After they left, we had to replace it for $8,500. During their stay, Your Honor, as I have indicated in my previous presentation, maybe it was a year and a half ago, they caused, because they failed to perform cleaning of the gutter, the neighbor's property was damaged. They didn't even inform me about that. The neighbor, during their residency, took me to D.C. Superior Court, sued me for the damages that they caused. I paid for the legal costs and for repairing their property and the gutter.
Well,
all were absorbed by me.
That raises a question to me of why didn't you had opportunity in Superior Court to plead them as a defendant so that they would help pay for this. Were you in Superior Court again pro se?
We settled it, Your Honor.
You settled it.
We settled it. We said, listen, I don't want to, as I tried to avoid this matter, I told them, let's move on. Your Honor, to describe how nasty these people are, they went to look at what they did. They went to Georgetown University.
Oh, I saw that. That's all in the
record. That's defamation, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Not only they did that, Your Honor, they also went to all the local communities. On top of that, they went to Representative Che. And through Representative Che, they got the legal services that you are provided.
I understand the nature of your concerns about...
Your Honor, they went to the D.C. Office of AG.
I understand, sir.
This is the level of intensity, Your Honor.
But unfortunately, that's beyond what we can talk about here. What we can talk about here is what were the errors that the judge may have made below in her decision.
No, simply the cost. My cost has to be paid for, correct?
Okay, so under the lease, then you're still... the judge said that, for example, one month's rent, $10,000, is highly disproportionate to the nature of what the damage actually was, so that $10,000, if damage was assessed at $500, assessing a penalty of $10,000...
No penalties assessed, Your Honor. All the penalties were excused. All of them are forgiven. We are talking about $34,000 worth of damages, Your Honor.
Now, why didn't you include those in your request of 45 days that you didn't list that $34,000 amount, the actual damages, within 45 days of the... within 45 days of the termination of the lease. Those came up late. Now, I think I know why, because in one of your documents you say, in the case of any damages that are caused during the tenant's lease, if the tenant fails to report or repair it, the landlord is authorized to fix the damages, charge the tenant, collect for the cost of the damages, and collect 1 month rent as a penalty accordingly. Obviously, there is no deadline stated for claiming my damages.
That was one issue, and in the letter which I sent them, Your Honor, I did clearly explain that these are the issues. None of the estimates are fully developed.
But there is a deadline under the law for claiming damages, which is that you acknowledge that by providing on September 10th an itemized list claiming 1 month's rent for the violation of a number of provisions of the lease. And this other estimate that came in at considerably more for actual damages was not presented to the court below.
It wasn't given to me,
Your Honor. Why didn't you then go to Superior Court and sue under the contract for actual damages?
I do have that right now. I could sue them for defamation right now for $1 million and as well as all my expenses.
But at the time...
Nothing is going to go away, Your Honor.
Now, I'm just wondering why...
Goodwill, Your Honor. Goodwill.
Goodwill.
I was in Canada. I was dealing with my own predicament and challenges in that time. I was honorable enough to let go of all these problems. They destroyed the property. Right now, the $2 million property is valued at $1.4 million. The floors have 1-inch holes. We couldn't fix them. The cost of repairing the whole floor is like $55,000.
Did you rent the property right after the tenants moved out?
With a delay.
Pardon me, it was
delayed.
How long was the delay?
About a month.
About a month. So is there any way of knowing who did what to your property since then?
Well, we documented all the problems while the gentleman, one of the representatives of the group, was there. We took pictures of everything. The pictures are also presented here.
And they were presented below to the court also, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and the court determined that some of them showed some damage, but others weren't.
Your Honor, the judge is not an expert. When the experts are trying to explain that, the cost of these repairs is around $40,000. The judge acts as an inspector, as a contractor. She thinks, without any background in engineering or in contract performance, that she doesn't think it costs that much.
But
she's not an expert.
Doesn't she depend on your expert to provide
my expertise? I have already indicated that the costs are already there. And I have indicated that it's not the end of it. As after your decision, Your Honor, I still have the right to collect for all my damages. That is more than $50,000 damages. And the defamation suit are still available to me. I'm not losing those opportunities. I showed grace. The reason I offered, Your Honor, settlement is not to collect money from them. I've had it with these abusers. I said, let's move on. Let's move on with our life. Enough of taking your time. Enough of taking DC Advocate's time. Enough of taking so many people who are involved in this case for nothing. No, they want to force this thing into a formal litigation. Then we do it that way. We bring formal expenses. All my rights are preserved, Your Honor.
Okay. Do you have any questions?
I noted that you began by saying that you had not received the appropriate time of their vacating the property, the 60-day notice, and I do recall that there is some indication that the administrative law judge had determined that the notice that they provided to the rental agent. Can you flesh out? Do you think that
yes?
That was
one thing among the many false statements they made was. They were in touch with the real estate agent. Real estate agent was not my property manager. She performed her service, brought them in, She collected 1 month rent from me for her services and moved on. They tried. This is a lawyer-to-be, Mr. Bell. He tried to construct a virtual or fake situation, suggesting that I was in touch with this lady. This lady was a real estate agent. She wasn't a property manager. I spoke with her at any time. At any time, she had no relationship with these people. They were constantly in touch with me. Catherine, one of the representatives, was continuously in touch with me. All these matters were being discussed with me. Under the lease agreement, they had obligation to maintain relationship with me. This lady is being used as a scapegoat. This lady was paid and moved on.
So within the four corners of the original lease that you had executed between the parties, there was specific contact information for you, and that didn't change during
the My information. The lady was paid as an agent and moved on.
So your information remained the same?
Yes. It was an email. An email has never changed.
And so you're indicating that during, at the time of their readiment to vacate, they did not reach out to you by email?
I did actually coordinate with them. I did do the walkthrough with them being present. All the pictures you see as the damages with the AJ ignored intentionally or whatever are done in front of them. When you honor, we went to the house, the cabinet doors are missing. And I didn't want to have any argument with a violent, angry tenant. So I said, fine, how about if we just take pictures and move on? Because they try to save a penny, correct? They try to argue over things. I said, listen, I'm not arguing. Let's just take pictures. Pictures don't lie, correct? I took pictures. Immediately, I called the contractor. You could see that on the day after they moved, two contractors came in. More than $35,000, or one of them $40,000 plus, provided estimates of all the damages. I didn't go after them, Your Honor. I could have, and I still I can, sue them for this thing. I said, I'm in Canada, let me be. Move on. You damaged, you exploited me. You didn't give me 6 days notice. You destroyed my AC. You destroyed the floor. 2 million property is now 1.4 million. I cannot sue you for that. You caused all these problems. Just move on. Get out of my life.
Thank you very much, sir. So we're going to reserve 5 minutes after the tenants, appellees, present their arguments. Mr. Sadeghi, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. My understanding of why we were here today was that on remand, the administrative law judge was instructed to provide additional findings of fact and conclusions of law with regard to the narrow issue of the lease provision requiring the tenants to pay 1 month's penalty for essentially violating any provision of the lease agreement. And that 1 month penalty, of course, would be $10,000. There are new issues that have been raised here that I'm happy to address and that in certain ways are beyond the record and beyond the evidence that was presented at the trial court, but I'm still happy to address them. Mr. Kobabai addressed the damages that he allegedly has incurred with regard to some $30,000 or so of expenses.
Well, right, and let me ask you this, Mr. Sadeghi. You couldn't have. It's exactly where I wanted to go. The law states that the itemized statement he provided shall constitute prima facie evidence that the tenant is entitled to full return. It doesn't mean unrebuttable presumption. It doesn't mean conclusive evidence that. And so the question that I have is, what grounds, legal grounds, did the court put on the record, for example, for not considering further damages beyond within a couple of on estimates provided maybe a couple of months after the first itemized list, what he was talking about, Mr. Purvai, the $33,000 and the other. So I'm just wondering, in your view, what did the court rely on to not consider those actual expenses?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. But of course, the law requires that within 45 days, the security deposit is to be returned to the tenants or a letter, such as Mr. Porvai sent on September 10th, informing that the security deposit will not be returned. And then within 30 days after that, the itemized list is to be issued to the tenants. Now, the itemized list included damages that were in the hundreds of dollars, not in the tens of thousands of dollars. So in response to your question, there are two responses. First, some of the evidence that Ms. Porvabhai has presented before the commission was not presented to the trial court. Now, the trial court did have some evidence before it in the form of testimony, in the form of alleged bills, and that evidence was considered, and the credibility of that evidence was considered by the trial judge. And it is my understanding that unless the findings of fact were unsupported by substantial evidence, which includes the trial judge's discretion in making a credibility finding, in other words, finding it not credible that you would initially send out a letter saying you've created damage in the amount of a few hundred dollars here and there, and going from that to now saying you've created damage upward of $30,000 and questioning the credibility of that discrepancy, that's well within the right of the trial judge. And the law does not... it is within the commission's discretion to overrule if the commission finds that either the trial court decision was arbitrary, capricious, or an abuse of that discretion. I submit to you that it wasn't, that she made the determination based on the evidence that was presented, based on reviewing the credibility of the parties and the statements made by the parties, and I submit that there were several false statements made by the parties, including one to the court commission just now.
What responsibility did the judge have below to provide some legal authority as to why they chose not to reach the potential of future damages? Did she have responsibility to address that?
May I ask for clarification about that? Are you referring to the actual damages caused in terms of property damage?
I think you referred to them as alleged bills or the estimates of potential. There was kind of a flavor below that there are these other larger looming expenses, and what responsibility did she have to confront them and say either I should respond to them or I don't have to respond to them? What legal authority did she have responsibility to address that below?
Well, I believe she had the responsibility to address them, and I believe she did address them. She left the record open for a substantial amount of time after the hearing was over in order to allow Ms. Porvabhai to submit additional documentation, which he did not. He made certain assertions at the hearing. The judge then allowed the record to remain open for him to support those assertions with additional testimony. He did not. But in her findings of fact, she does address all of the evidence that was presented, even after that additional timeline expired. And I'm happy to go through it, but you have it before you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Excuse me?
That's fine.
Yeah. So it's my understanding, and let me address one other issue that was brought up, which was that the property was rented with delay. That is a statement that Mr. Porvabhai made earlier when you asked him whether the property was rented subsequently after these tenants left. And this was the issue regarding the 60-day notice to vacate. He said, yes, it was rented, but it was rented with a delay. That statement is false. The trial judge, actually, in her findings of fact, noted that the tenants, my clients, in initial plaintiff's case, lease ran out on July 31st, 2013, that a new lease by subsequent tenants was signed in March of 2013, and it commenced on August 1, 2013. So one day after my clients moved out, new tenants moved in, and that evidence was actually supported by the lease agreements that were entered into the record as exhibits, Plaintiff's Exhibit 101 and 102.
Mr. Savetti, let me ask you this. What type of expert testimony was presented below to support these various estimates of damages?
None.
In other words, for example, the $30,000 or whatever, there was obviously it was submitted as written evidence, and there was what testimony supported the amount and the nature of the damage?
None. Just okay. The plaintiff, just the defendants.
And let me ask you this. Your client signed $120,000.
I'm sorry?
Your client signed a lease for really 12 months at $10,000, which is $120,000. $10,000 lease, and the nature of this property, at least as it was described, would seem to indicate that what 1 month of damages for a breach is, it's not unreasonable under many contracts. Here, the court found that given the nature of the discrepancy between the $10,000 and the actual evidence in the record of the damages for which not the actual damages claimed later, but the damages that were claimed in the 45 within the 45-day period, there was a gross discrepancy. It is less of a discrepancy when you look past that and go to actual damages that are claimed later. Now, the question, again, to me, the question arises, did the court, in your view, and what would be your position on the court, whether the court gave adequate consideration to the actual damages that were claimed and adequately disposed of them in her decision below with respect to the payment of 1 month's rent or $10,000 to account for them? So was there an adequate attempt to deal with those other damages, not the 45-day damages, but and secondly to relate that to the 1 month penalty? And because one would think that given the nature of the excess damages, 1 month's rent wouldn't cover all of the damages that were being claimed in the later statements.
Yes.
You see what I mean?
Yes, Mr. Commissioner.
Give me some your thoughts on that?
Certainly. There are two issues there. Number one, some of these allegations that Mr. Porvabhai has made since the hearing and the evidence was closed and the judge issued her ruling were not presented to the judge at that time. As you mentioned, there was no expert testimony presented to the judge to substantiate these claims that all of these damages had occurred. The tenants testified to the damages. The tenants have photographs of the conditions of the property. The photographs were presented to the judge. The judge reviewed those photographs and considered them against the testimony provided by the tenants who were there and the testimony provided by Mr. Porvabhai, who testified at the hearing. And in making that credibility determination and weighing the evidence, she made the determination that it was not credible that there was $30,000 and some change of damages. And that is appropriate under the circumstances.
In the absence of expert testimony on either side to say yes, I mean your clients didn't introduce experts to say no, that $30,000 was not reasonable. Did you did your clients enter any expert testimony with respect to rebutting what the actual damages were?
We did not. No, there was no expert testimony. However, there was circumstantial evidence to show that these claims were false and in certain ways even absurd. First of all, Mr. Porvabhai claimed that he engaged in certain repairs and made certain payments. And that's false. There was absolutely no time between when my clients vacated the premises and when the next clients moved in to make any repairs. The next tenants moved in the day after my clients moved out.
I heard you say that the new lease began the next day.
Correct.
I didn't see anywhere where there was any evidence that anyone actually moved in as opposed to a new lease. So are you making the correlation that because someone has a new lease that meant they moved in, or are you saying that in there there was specific testimony indicating that because there was a new lease, someone moved in? Because I guess I must have missed that. I understand that there was a new lease, but I don't know that that necessarily meant that people moved in. Are you saying that maybe I missed that?
The initial hearing in this matter was 3 to 4 years ago, so I can't claim to have an encyclopedic knowledge of what happened, but it is my recollection that there was testimony that subsequent tenants moved in the following day because the tenants who moved out were in touch with those tenants who moved back in.
I have a question. Was there ever any were your clients ever directed to Superior Court to sue on this contract as a lease rather than an administrative court? Was it the return of the security deposit that was really the issue, or were there really suing also under provisions of the lease where they felt that they weren't that the landlord had violated certain terms of the lease?
It was only
it's a security deposit case solely. Is that okay?
Correct.
And so when Mr. Purbhai talks about other retaining rights to sue in Superior Court under the lease, were those ever communicated to you or your clients in the since the security deposit petition was filed?
Threats of litigation?
Yeah.
Yes, on a number of occasions there have been threats of litigation. They started in the letters that are in the record, and if I may direct the court.
That's fine. No, it's just but there was never any, outside of threats, there was never any action taken, any actions in Superior Court, to your knowledge, to enforce any of these rights under the contract?
There were not.
Commissioner?
Yeah.
Commissioner Spencer?
If I may.
Mr. Sadeghi, sure, you've got to, you know, take another minute or two to sum up if you want.
The major issue that I believe should have been, that I would have liked to have addressed was the issue of liquidated damages versus penalties, and if I may address that issue.
Yeah.
There are really two types of provisions. Liquidated damages are admitted if there is a level of equal bargaining power, and if the actual damages are difficult to ascertain at the time of the execution of the contract, and if there's a reasonable relationship between liquidated damages and the expected harm. Now, they're not enforceable if they serve as a penalty and if the non-breaching party benefits more from the breach than from the performance. And the court addressed this issue, and there is a catch-all provision in the lease agreement that says if this lease or any of its conditions are violated, the tenants agree to pay a fee equal to 1 month's rent, $10,000, to the landlord to compensate the landlord. Now, there are a number of provisions in the lease agreement that could be violated that could either cause no damage or very nominal damages, if any, including using the elevator, which is something that the trial judge referenced. And she said that the provision states that if the elevator is used or misused, the tenant is liable for 1 month rent as a penalty and the repair cost. There are a number of other provisions similar to that, such as tenants obtaining renter's insurance, which would have no potential harm to the landlord. So I'd like to direct the court's attention to the case law that the lower court
relied on. We were included that in our, I think, in our footnote in our case to direct the court to consider whether certain of these provisions were in fact legal or not under liquidated damages provisions. Let me ask you something, and this goes to somewhat of a clean hands kind of issue. Mr. Purbhai began by saying that there were 8 student lawyers and 8 tenants and they signed this agreement. And I mean, in signing this agreement, you know, they may have done it without kind of understanding that they were talking about $10,000 for damages when they're talking about 1 month's rent. On the other hand, if you ascribe a certain level of reasonability to the tenants in entering this agreement, could it be argued that damages could be reasonably foreseeable to this property in the amount of $10,000, and even if not actually reaching that amount, the term itself was reasonable under the circumstances? Or is the term in this particular case unreasonable?
I believe that it is unreasonable. I don't believe there's a whole lot of doubt about that. And if you look at some of these provisions, for example, just again the use of the elevator provision, the tenants could have just entered the elevator, gone up a flight of stairs, gotten out, and that could have entitled him to $10,000 worth of damages, which has absolutely no relationship to any harm that was incurred. In fact, there may not have been any harm incurred. Or other provisions such as tenants will not place any heavy articles in the premises. The tenants could have moved in a bed or a couch or some sort of dresser into the premises. He could have entered the premises and said, well, you violated that provision, so now I'm entitled to $10,000, even though there's no proof of any damages.
Let me ask you this one. Let me ask you a little different one, and this will be my last question. Notice. Notice isn't taking an elevator. It's not. But it is an important legal right, and it's an important legal It's an important element of any contract between a landlord and a tenant. And here, there was a specific provision about 60 days. And your clients agreed, yeah, maybe there must have been some calculation, or was there, that the failure to provide notice for 60 days would be the equivalent of $10,000. Is that the kind of provision that maybe should have been given some consideration different from taking an elevator, for example?
It's a reasonable question, Mr. Chairman, and I absolutely understand it. My response is that this was an issue that was addressed by the trial judge. The tenant's testimony was that their relationship became very strained with Mr. Porbabai. He refused to address one tenant and then asked that somebody else contact him and so on. And it became to the point where they just worked with Ms. Coons, who was the real estate agent. And the testimony before the court was that they did inform her more than 60 days in advance. They worked with her in understanding that new tenants were going to be moving in, and in fact new tenants did move in, and I submit to you that if they hadn't provided that testimony, that this new lease would not that notice that the new lease would not have been able to be signed by March of 2013. So months, more than 2 months or 60 days before the new lease came into place and their lease were to expire. Thank so the you. Notice was in fact given.
Commissioner?
I guess I'm just want a little bit more clarification, which is not specifically determined by the facts of this case. I thought what the chairman was essentially asking was that in this particular situation, given that the monthly rent was $10,000, it would seem reasonable to one that the housing provider would ask for a 60-day period of time in order to obviously locate individuals who would have the financial ability to provide the $10,000 monthly rent. And so in response to the chairman's question, might the judge below have kind of provided an analysis of how reasonable the $10,000 penalty might have been just on the issue of not following the notice proceedings, because you're not renting an apartment that's worth $450. You're renting an apartment, a home that's worth $10,000. And so the fact that in this situation there was a specific number of days of 60 days, and in violating that, as opposed to some of the other provisions you referred to, perhaps that might have been reasonable. And did you think that there was a need below for the judge to tease out the different penalty provisions and acknowledging that some actually could have been reasonable and some were not reasonable, as opposed to just kind of leaving them there? And I guess that's kind of the question I thought that,
sure.
Because it could appear to be reasonable that if the rent is $10,000, that the housing provider would like 60-day notice to find someone else.
Well, let me address a premise that I believe is mistaken, which is that the tenants violated that 60-day notice provision.
That's not the issue. I'm trying to find out whether you thought...
If the tenants...
Regardless.
Right.
The issue is, should the ALJ below have taken the time to evaluate the various penalty provisions to weigh whether they all should be viewed the same way or some of them actually, based on this case, could have been reasonable and were not actually as onerous as others, like using the elevator, all right? The $10,000 for using the elevator, but $10,000 for violating the 60-day penalty. Was there a necessity for that person to give a legal analysis of differentiating between the penalties?
I believe she should, and I believe she did.
Okay.
She actually, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't want to misquote her, but I believe in her additional findings of fact, she did address that issue, which is the 60-day notice. And that's on page 5 of her most recent opinion, that where she addresses the 60-day notice to quit. So the answer to your question is yes, I believe she should have. I believe she did, and I believe her analysis was reasonable in that making the determination that when the tenants did abide by the terms of the lease agreement, and they did provide more than 60 days notice, and that there was no harm incurred by the landlord, that $10,000 would only serve as a penalty, which the courts will never allow.
Thank you, Mr. Sadeghi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Purbhavai.
Your Honor, I'm astonished by the lies, just astonished and insulted. It's just unbelievable. First of all, about the 60-day notice. The fact that somebody signs an agreement, Your Honor, doesn't mean that they're going to pay their rent or their deposit. Routinely, Georgetown students mislead. Routinely, Your Honor. And that's why we pay a professional company to do these things. So that the company would be liable. They sign, they don't honor it. They said, well, my daddy said, I'm not going to accept it. So what did you sign? Sorry, daddy is not going to do it. He lives. The specific contract, Your Honor, specifically demands you provide 60-day notice in writing. It doesn't say contact whoever you wish. Mr. Sadeghi has made false statements that they have been in touch with Ms. Koontz. Ms. Koontz has declared, I was not involved with this thing. He has no proof of any communication with Ms. Koontz. He just lies because he can. It is not true. Ms. Koontz was not involved. She was an agent. She's a high-priced agent. She was paid 1 month rent and moved out of this relationship. The next individual who expressed interest to lease the property was not introduced through Ms. Koontz. Ms. Koontz moved out. The reason why Ms. Koontz was, unfortunately, a very nice lady, suffered cancer. So all the stories are lies by Mr. Sadeghi. But it's okay. During the trial, I wasn't present. I was in Canada. He says that I presented information and the judge accepted. All lies. All I did was, through these written documents, pictures were sent to the judge. What do you mean these are not acceptable? All these pictures were sent to the judge. All the documentations were sent to the judge. Pictures, Your Honor, members of the commission, were taken in front of the tenant. The day we did a walkthrough, he was present. Now he's telling me, among many false statements he has made, that tenants took pictures and they presented their pictures to the judge. Are they that stupid to take pictures of the damages and present it to the judge, given that half of them are lawyers? They would, of course, take pictures from the skies. The pictures we took were done in front of them. We presented it to the judge. I wasn't there. Everything is done long distance. I was never served. I voluntarily showed up in these proceedings. When I'm not served, I don't have any liability. It doesn't mean that I cannot sue them in the future. Those liabilities, those rights are preserved. But I showed grace. I said, move on. Let's move on. Doesn't worth it. during among the many false statements Mr. Saberi made, in all my statements I've said about, I didn't say that's the cause. Every statement says about. I'm not an expert. The expert came and said, no sir, the cost of repairing your garage door, because they were drunk and they hit the garage, they fractured the whole wall, is not $500 that I assumed, correct? The actual cost is $4,500 because the wall is cracked. They were drunk, they hit the garage frame, so the whole wall broke. So I didn't know that. Because I use the word about, I'm going to be liable for this number. I didn't charge them for any of these things. I just said, let's go. So you have made so much damages, which is excess of $70,000. Just move on. Let's move on. Get out of my hair. I don't have any hair. But get out of my hair. Leave me alone. That was the spirit of it. When I showed my grace and I spoke with them, I wasn't serving Your Honor. I was in Canada doing my life. Mr. Saderi came after me, tried to bully me. No, you have an obligation. I still have no obligations. I'm showing under my goodwill. I have no obligations to you. I wasn't served. I'm in Canada. For 2 years, you were in Canada. They just make false statements one after the other that Ms. Coons was involved. Ms. Coons suffered cancer, terminal cancer. God's grace, she's saved now. But she's maintaining a low profile. What do you mean she was representing? They'll just make false statements and shamelessly they repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. The damages to me are preserved. That means if I choose to sue them, I have the right to sue them. I'm just saying let's move on. Abuse is enough. This individual, this office should not be defending these rich people. These people should protect people who are destitute in this great city, okay? They are here because of political power of Bell to go to Inspector General, go to AG. Who has the power to go to the councilwoman to line them up? They are not here as, you don't see any destitute person they are defending. They are defending people who are multimillionaires because we verified them. Everyone has enough money to go to our house, which was $2 million. All of them multimillionaire. How in the heaven do they have the power to go after IG, city councilman, the mayor, to line up these people here to come and protect them for free?
Mr. Purvai, let me ask you.
This is not right, Your Honor.
Let me ask you a question. Given how valuable your property was, and still remains, but was, You rent to college students, and you are not there. You're absent. You have other business. Wouldn't it have been reasonable to have someone on a monthly basis provide you reports on the condition of the house? Because it seems that what we have here what the judge below had was a situation where there were all of these allegations of damages, and obviously each party tries to minimize their responsibility and the amount of damage. Was there ever any property manager that could have served to help you verify all of the damages that you are now claiming? Was there any third party that could have witnessed this at all? Was there any evidence of that there was independent evidence that this was that to support your position?
You have very good observations. We learn about this thing. My wife raised the issue. Why don't we get a property manager? So we retained a lady from Weikert Realty. We paid $1,000. We have a contract. And in the following year, we did this thing. So this lady was responsible in 2014 thereafter while we are in Canada. This person rented to two groups of Georgetown students while we weren't even involved, correct? One of them sat there 1 year without paying a penny to us, that case is still in D.C. Superior Court. 1 year. Six Georgetown medical students are multimillionaire because otherwise they cannot rent these expensive properties. 1 year, they didn't pay rent. They sat there. The other group rented for 2 years. After 1 year, they just packed and left like that. Their house is $45,000 worth of repairs. It's a different property. They actually went to Mr. Sadedi because the Georgetown students have a social club. They inform each other that there is an office which could help you. So this con has now become, has developed teeth, correct? The con works as follows. Georgetown student rent, they know that one person died 8 years ago out of horrible situation. He was in a basement and he couldn't leave the property. Mayor was publicly prosecuted or persecuted, correct? This is 8 years ago. After that time, everybody is sensitive. All they have to say is the word safety. If you use the word safety, DCRA immediately sent inspectors to the property. It's standard routine. DC inspectors, Your Honor, are not trained to investigate. They just observe violations of any of the statutes, so they give you infraction notices, correct? This is a con. Immediately, all it takes for them to not pay rent, they claim safety issues. Suddenly, they become this little child, correct? I don't know. It's the window cannot be opened, correct? I may not breathe. Immediately, DCRA send their inspectors, and they know that this office is there to protect them. By the way, last 2 weeks ago, publicly, this office was announced to protect every DC resident against the landlords. To tell you how political is this office. But you don't see them protecting the poor people who are suffering in those poor houses under the slumlords. But they are protecting the rich people, huh? Because the rich people could reach their bosses to send them here and sit here row by row.
Okay. That's that. We're going to call it. Thank you, sir. I think we understand pretty clearly your frustration. I think what we have to do is take a look at the decision below and say, did the judge follow the law and come up with conclusions that are still within the law? And I think you provided us with your arguments about the legal arguments, and Mr. Sadeghi, thank you. You did also. So it's now 2:57, and this hearing is hereby adjourned.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome.